This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Levels, jeez, sorry, my bad. You got to check your levels when you're speaking into a microphone.
Levels.
There you go. All right. Hello, guys. Welcome to Auto Central. Brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. I'm going to blame it on the weather. I'm blaming it on the weather this morning.
A little bit of water falls out of the sky, and everybody loses their collective mind.
I wonder what it is. Why? Why do you think that happens? What is it about? As soon as a little
rain in winter in Joburg.
Well, this is more like what should be happening in the Cape.
Rain in Joburg period.
Well, listen, I mean, it's good to have the rain, but we don't normally have it this time of the year.
Why everybody sort of went, what is this? Is it like wet snow?
Wet snow. Well, we did have a bit of snow last week, didn't we?
Yeah, in Cape Town.
In Cape Town, and it snowed in the Berg.
Yeah.
All good. All right, guys. Well, in the studio with me this morning, as per usual, Lawrence, Martin, and George. How are you guys doing?
Hey, what up?
Good. Fantastic. Right. Well, let's kick things off. We've got quite a bit to get through this morning, and I thought what we'd do is we'd start off. I mean, we are pretty much halfway through the year. We're into the back end of 2018. I can't believe how quickly the back nine. Yeah, I can't believe how quickly the first half of the year has gone.
You actually compared that to golf.
That wasn't me. That was Lawrence. But anyway, I wanted to have a look at the top-selling vehicles in key segments, and this is a report on the back of some vehicle sales from the back end of June. New vehicle sales in South Africa took a slight upturn in June, and at 46,678 units, recorded a 3% increase over sales figures for June 2017. This is also well above the 42,950 sales seen in May. Surprise, the top-selling car in this country?
VW Polo?
No.
The Vivo?
No.
Toyota
Hilux. Can you believe it? I mean,
top-selling vehicle, yeah.
Well, yeah. We always, it's a top-selling double cab is the Toyota Hilux.
Yes.
Top-selling hatchback, Polo Vivo. Top-selling sedan.
No, but hang on a sec here. So on the new vehicle sales charts, the Toyota Hilux took its customary place as not only SA's best-selling bucky, but the overall top performer in June. With its Ford, the Ranger in second place in overall vehicle sales. And then the Nissan NP200, now without competition in the half-ton bucky class, after obviously the demise of the Chevy Ute, which was the Opel Corsa bucky. Mm-hmm. And that was the country's fourth best-selling vehicle overall, which now, I thought was rather...
How much of that is private sales and how much of it is fleet and business?
I have no idea. The list don't tell me. But what we are going to unpack is we're going to look at... There's a couple of segments. So the top-selling budget car, VW Polo.
No, it's never really private. I mean, our private market is very, very much... small compared to the dealer market,
sure.
So it won't be private.
Not individual customer sales.
I think it's a lot of fleet purchases mines, industrial.
Yeah,
that's why Hiluxes are. And they're the vehicle of choice for that kind of industry.
Absolutely.
So the depressing / interesting bit on budget cars is the second place goes to Renault Kwid.
Why is that depressing?
I think I just threw up in my mouth.
Because nobody apparently listens when we tell them not to buy it.
Well, clearly 1,023 people in June didn't listen to you.
Nope.
So anyway,
you've got to give it to Renault. They know how to market that car.
Yeah.
The multitude of motoring journalists that dislike it won't sway people when you're giving them a lot of free stuff for buying the car.
Absolutely. The top compact car was VW Polo, followed by the Toyota Yaris. The compact medium car, Toyota Corolla, followed by the VW Golf. Now, I wouldn't have thought, I don't know, maybe it's just me, that the VW Golf would have been a compact medium car.
Well, it goes up against things like the Jetta and BMW 1 Series, so I reckon, yeah.
Okay.
Right, what the other Jazz is doing in there is a bit of a surprise. That should be the Honda Civic, I reckon.
Civic instead of the Jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you have a look at the executive cars, BMW 3 Series, what I was very surprised about this list, Audi A4 coming in second, BMW 3 Series, 530 units sold. I don't know if any of you watched Carte Blanche last night.
No, apparently you should have watched CarPlus.
You should have watched, especially if you were in the motor industry. So there was a Ponzi scheme that a whole bunch of people got roped into. And I can't quite recall the company, there was an organization that obviously did something with BMW Melrose Arch, funny enough. You know, they showed the building and I was like, hang on a sec, we know those people, you know. And basically what had happened is people were incentivized to purchase vehicles, and that was offset against an offshore investment in Dubai with oil and stuff like that. And apparently the money that you would have got out of the investment would have recovered your monthly costs on your vehicle, and you actually would have got money out. So basically, I mean, the crazy thing is, and I still can't fathom this, there was one family that bought three BMWs. Their monthly repayments on the vehicles were 30,000 rand a month. Out of the investment that they were going to get from this other company, they were going to get like 30,500. So they were essentially being paid 500 rand a month, and they were getting the BMWs. So yeah, I mean, it was quite
too good
story.
To be true.
But that's exactly what the whole story was about. If it sounds too good to be true, you can't do it. So
you will get nothing in life for free.
Well, absolutely. What I don't understand is how these guys go about putting these kind of deals together. Surely somebody's, you know, wise enough or smart enough to go, hang on a sec, yeah.
Yeah, but those are the guys who walk away. The suckers buy into it.
You pitch that to 1,000 people. If two people say yes,
yeah,
you've made your money.
Well, I mean, you know, not that I got anything against you know, religious people, but there was also a minister involved in, like a religious minister, not a minister in the government minister, who was obviously promoting this whole thing. So yeah, it was quite interesting. But anyway, so like I said, BMW 3 Series 530 units. But I see the Volkswagen the Arteon. Down in 7th place.
Martin's favorite car.
Yeah, well, I mean, when we reviewed it, we spoke about it. Nice looking car, but you know,
that's exactly what I thought would happen.
They'd
sell like 60 for the first 2 months, and then it will settle down to 30.
Yep.
For the next year, and then it'll slowly disappear.
Yeah. Well, maybe your prediction is coming right. The compact SUV crossover, Hyundai Creta, and then the compact medium SUV crossover, Toyota RAV4 in top place.
Which is a big surprise, because that thing is really old now. I mean, it's due for a replacement.
The RAV4.
The RAV4 is due for replacement soon.
So 753 right units sold in June, and that topped the VW Tiguan at 518 units.
Mm.
So quite interesting. And then the large SUV crossover, Toyota Fortuna,
obviously,
hands down, and then Ford Everest. But, you know, Fortuna selling almost...
There's not pretty much else in that segment.
Exactly. And then obviously Toyota Hilux Ranger, and then the NP200 in the Bucky segment. So yeah, nice to see that. But good to see that vehicle sales are up year on year, which is positive.
It's still rolling stock, so...
No, that world's over, eh? In most manufacturers, that world doesn't exist anymore. The OEMs don't allow pre-reporting as much as they used to.
So I see, and the only thing that I need to state there is that that obviously excludes any Mercedes-Benz vehicles, because they don't release
There's a number of manufacturers that don't, so that list is missing a few.
There is missing a few. I wonder why. Is it just a top secret kind of stuff?
They just choose.
That's
not
why I
to
believe Auto Trader's search results lists.
Absolutely, exactly. Because
we don't leave cars out.
We don't leave cars out. Yeah, we'll give you all the lists that you need. All right. This kind of it didn't scare me, but it just gave away my age. Do you know that I'm as old as the VW, the Golf, the original Golf, the Mark 1.
What was your first car, Ty?
My first car was a Beetle.
My first car was a 1976 VW Golf Mark 1.
So I had a car that was this exact color.
Oh.
Just wasn't the Mark 1, it was the Mark 2.
Okay.
Jumbo.
With the exact... No, it wasn't the Jumbo.
No, not the Jumbo. No, the Jumbo came after that. We'll go through the story now.
It was the one... It was this exact shape, but it had the wider taillights.
Mm. So remember? It's from 1981 onwards.
Yes. And it had this exact orange...
indicators?
No, orange seats. Yep. But this one's leather. I had the suede.
It had little holes in it. Oh, did you have
the suede? Suede
nice.
Seats, exact. this exact Golf. It was my second car.
So second anyway, car. Let's say incredible.
Was 1500. It was
51 kilowatts of brutal power.
Yeah, it was a 1500.
I loved my car. I already did.
And so did
I. It looked exactly like that picture. It had the steel bumpers.
Yeah.
And I poured every single last cent I had into that car.
So VW's Evergreen Golf celebrates 40 years in South Africa. The original Golf, known as the Mach 1, was released in the South African market in May 1978 with the 1100 cc L two door styling. Mustang, and you could have purchased that for 3,985 rand. The LS four door for 4,135 rand, and the range topping 51 kilowatt, 1500 GLS four door manual and automatic at 4,940 rand.
Well, exactly. when I bought my car in 1997,
yeah,
I paid 8,000 rand for it.
I'm sure. So anyway, the story begins even further back in January 1970. Iconic designer, let me just get his name right, Giorgetto
Giugiaro
was invited to Wolfsburg to design the front wheel drive liquid cooled replacement for the Beetle. So this car, obviously, from the story, replaced the Beetle. So successful was the crisp edge result that they described it as the most important. The designer described it as the most important design of his career. And the only thing that the production engineers at VW changed were he had originally designed square lights for the front of the car, and they had the round lights in production.
Correct
so
me if I'm wrong
cost.
Here, Martin. Wasn't this the same guy that did the Polo, the original Polo, and the Lancia Delta?
Lancia Delta, as well as the original Volkswagen Scirocco.
So you can sort
well.
Of see the design elements yeah. carrying yes. across. It doesn't matter who.
Yeah.
It's the same guy that made the Jaguar and the Aston Martin.
Similar designs.
Yeah, tracing paper.
But I mean, you know.
What and the Lancia Delta had square headlights.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
So probably look, from this design.
Going in on the history of these things.
Yeah.
The design houses in Europe, every couple of years, they rolled out their new design language, and then all the manufacturers bought into it.
Yeah.
So in this case, it was Giugiaro with Volkswagen and a couple of other manufacturers. Later on, it was Pininfarina who did a whole bunch of Peugeots and some Alphas as well. And you can see they almost all look alike yeah. as well.
Which was the Jumbo Golf? Was that the second
that
version?
That was the second
Mark
generation.
Second, the Mark yeah. 2. And then the Mark 3 came in after
the
that.
The round one.
And when they brought the round one in, then they launched the City Golf. You know, red, yellow, blue, not green. Do you remember that ad? Mm. I mean, yeah. iconic.
I've owned six campaign. Mark 1 Volkswagens over the years.
Really?
Yeah. yeah.
Sorry. I think my dad had one okay, of
those. I want another one.
They're beautiful cars. They really, really are nice. I mean, if you look at it now, I mean, you know.
Probably, it is the car that taught me about cars.
Mm.
Absolutely.
And it is such an easy car to work on from a
and
mechanical
cheap
standpoint.
Cheap as well.
Yeah.
And you can pick up spares and bits and pieces and
pick
parts.
And pick and it clicks and you can fix it with...
baling wire and a piece of duct tape.
There we go.
Really, it is...
And a paper clip.
And that's why I love them so much.
It was probably the best first car you could probably own.
Yeah.
Barring a Beetle, which is probably more straightforward than
these Golfs, and like the Toyota Taz and I mean mainly the Toyota Taz and these and this shaped Golf. You know, one of the main reasons they stopped producing them was because of safety issues.
No airbags,
no electric windows, no aircon, no retractable
seat.
The bonnet was a big problem because the bonnet acted like a frisbee. The angle of that bonnet was problematic.
Oh, only if you used non-original bonnets, though. Original ones had little kinks in them to collapse in a certain way.
They didn't have crumple zones.
And an interesting thing is the Golf was the first car in this of this class to actually feature crumple zones.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
Jeez, luck. Well, I mean, this car, I mean, it's certainly an icon. Car. What would something like that go for? I mean,
now.
An original one like these.
You see the original 1500cc, which is the one I had,
yes.
was 4,940. I think I paid 6,000 rand for that car.
Yeah.
I think now, a Mark 1 Golf original.
If it can move on its own power, you'll pay 15 grand. And if it's in original condition, you'd pay 40.
Really?
Yeah.
I've seen these things go upwards of 100K.
Are there any rabbits driving around in South Africa? Because I've not seen
one. Okay, wait, hang on a sec. Sorry, the non-petrol head here. What the hell is a rabbit?
Rabbit was the turbo. US market.
It was the US version.
It was the M3 eater.
Okay.
That didn't come here.
Yeah. Really?
the thing is, we did get a handful of the special edition ones, the cabriolets.
Yeah.
But so you do, and when you do see them, you'll see them at things like VW Fest and Dub Run. You know, the VW.
It was 1600 turbo, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, 1600.
And then of course there was the CTI.
Yeah, but the CTI wasn't turbocharged.
No, but we never had any turbo versions of these things.
People brought in the turbo ones.
Were converted by Alpine Developments way back when, which bumped them up to something like an astronomical 100 kilowatts.
You wanted a CTI with a hairdryer on it. That was it.
Yeah, in 1996, well, I mean, we were obviously in matric. If you had a CTI, you were the man.
You were the man.
And we had one of our mates, he was a twin, and him and his sister both got them new for their 18th.
I must tell you, it was the CTI, and some of my friends had the Nissan Sentra.
STI.
Nissan Sentra was the shit too.
Also.
Yeah, that Nissan Sentra.
The nice thing about the old Golf 1.
The Superboss.
But those were expensive and they never really got affordable.
Only my Richie 10
and you had to know how to drive.
Yes.
To handle the torque steer.
Yep.
Okay, all right.
So long live the beloved Golf 1. I still want another one.
I think what they should do is convert all of them to electric cars. Mott, what do you think?
No.
Okay, just checking. All right. Right, let's move on here. An exec accused of stealing Waymo's trade secret starts new life, new self-driving company. So, I don't know, Anthony Lewandowski, one of the most controversial figures in the self-driving car business, is connected to a new driverless truck startup called Cachet AI. The company is still in stealth mode. Anyway, this guy worked for Google. And he was a key figure in the Google self-driving car program before he left to start another company called Otto. But there seems to be a lot of this in the media at the moment. You know, people obviously jumping ship and moving, you know, moving to start startups and obviously taking a lot of the IP with them. I don't know, and I just thought maybe we could banter about this a bit. I mean, is it right? Is it wrong? You know, look, you shouldn't be able to steal anything, but where do you draw the line?
We here in South Africa, and I'm coming from the previous industry that I was in. You, when you started with a company, you signed a little document called the Restraint of Trade.
Yes. Yeah.
And you were prohibited for 2 years after you've left a certain place from divulging any information that concerned that company.
Yeah.
You shouldn't need that unless you are really, 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 really ticked off or the company completely abused you.
Mm.
Even then, you know, it's underhanded. I don't agree with it. And I don't think you should be.
So let's just say you're working for an organization and you think you come up with a better way to do things and then you go on your own. Are you stealing? Are you taking all that information with you to go and do something that you.
Is it. Look, is I it think their the foundation. Is it yours?
Well, I don't know. You know, this is always going to be the
I don't think there's a clear answer. But if you work for a business and that business gives you all of the tools to come up with that idea,
100%. I think therein lies
you
the
know,
answer.
That it could be argued that hold on a second, if you weren't here, you'd never even kind of dreamt that up.
And if the IP came from the individual, so you employed somebody and they bring that great idea and they launch
it
to the business.
Well, then the company needs to kind of contract properly.
100%.
You know? So it's all in the agreement. You walk into a relationship with an agreement.
Yeah.
And you've got to honor that agreement. Yeah. And if you think it's a challengeable agreement, then challenge it by all means, you know, but you got to honor those agreements.
So this Lewandowski guy is apparently quite a, I don't want to say hothead, but he really is not, his whole thing was about rolling out the cars as quickly as possible, and there were obviously safety issues with some of the first self-driving cars that Google came up
with. Smashing.
And he was like, no, stuff it, let's just get the first 1,000 out, and we need to get better tech into the cars. So he was like, let's get these cars onto the road, and then, you know, we'll get the better tech. So anyway, just interesting to see, and I just wanted to bring that up. Anyway.
Well, let's just talk about this principle in terms of Larry Page and Sergey Brin. Have you seen the movie made about Larry Page and Sergey Brin?
No. He's still the CEO of Alphabet.
Yes. So I mean, in a nutshell, the story goes that everybody in the industry has stolen from somebody else, even Facebook.
Yes.
The guy you've seen the Facebook movie.
Yeah.
So even Facebook, the original kind of concept wasn't the founders of Facebook.
No, it was the twins or whatever they were, and they were just going to create a inter-university kind of
chat. No original idea.
Every picture is a picture of a picture.
So Steve Jobs, where did he get the ideas from? He went and stole them from Xerox PARC. Xerox PARC, who was owned by IBM at the time.
Yeah.
And Xerox PARC had this little machine that they shelved, or this project that they shelved. They had a little team in a corner. I was working on this project, and the project had this GUI, this user interface, where it was a mouse on a screen and icons on a screen, and you could point and click.
Oh wow!
And and that's where that came from. And then guess where Windows got it?
Where did they get it
from? From Apple. So you know, this seems to be kind of like a couple of decades old,
well, it's probably been going on for ages.
The winner is
ultimately the person that gets it to market first.
Yeah. You know? But I mean, in none of those scenarios that I just described did anybody work for anybody else. It was more kind of an entrepreneur on their own, seeing an idea and going to execute it. Maybe this is crossing the line as we put it.
Bit of a thievery going on there. Anyway, guys, let me ask you a question. Would you pay $700 plus a monthly fee for a digital license plate?
Sure.
What's it made of?
Well, I don't know. It's digital. It's probably made of...
Is it like a photo, one of those digital photo frames that you sit on your desk?
No, it's kind of like a Kindle.
Yeah.
So similar to a Kindle, yeah.
On the front of your car.
Yeah.
Stone chips.
Yeah.
But expensive.
No.
And it breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad idea.
Hang on a sec. You say bad idea. I don't. Basically, let me just give this.
How long before somebody hacks it and does like a James Bond?
Well, the thing is, you can actually customize. So your plate. So let's just paint the picture here, right? You have a license plate like we all have. This thing is designed to look the exact same way that your current, you know, printed license plate looks, and it's got everything that you need. But it's also obviously it's got a microchip in it that allows you to kind of track your routes. And I suppose like Apple, you know, you can find your watch, find your car. It's got this kind of setup in it. It will also track your routes. So kind of like Waze, when you're driving, it will plot your routes and stuff like that. And then what they're saying is they want to give this to the insurance companies, and you pretty much pay, well, into the road agencies, and you pretty much pay fees based on your usage of the roads. So that's one thing. Another thing they're looking at is
sounds like e-tolls.
Yep.
Pretty much sounds like e-tolls. But I suppose
this is an e-tag with a display unit.
What they're saying now, near the end of the article, they talk about selling advertising space on it. So when you park your car in a shopping center, you can now display a brand ad on the back of your car and obviously generate income for yourself. But these guys are they kind of umming and ahhing. The license plate has been given the go ahead in Arizona, Texas, Florida, Washington, and they're obviously looking to push it into other states like Georgia, Illinois, Michigan, Colorado, and New Mexico. The article goes on to say that this guy's experience of a few weeks, there's no clear and compelling case to be made as to why most of us, and they're saying non-rich individuals, you know, need a fancy plate like this. But I kind of see that this would be normal evolution of the license plate.
So then just microchip the car. You don't need a fancy
plate. That's the thing.
Plate.
We already have all the technology. We carry it in our pockets already.
The appealing part of what you said was the ability to display an ad while the car is parked.
Well, that's appealing. And the only other thing, and so what you can do as well is at the bottom of the plate, you can customize a message. So if you were off to, I don't know, watch the Bulls play the Sunwolves, you could say, you know, go the Bulls. I think the only thing that I would like this is to be able to type a message to the chop driving up your arse.
Turn your brights off.
If you'll turn your brights off, and if you don't back up.
I'm just going to slow down.
I'm just
going to
slow down.
Enforce a
you
bigger...
You know you're busy promoting road rage, right?
No, but is that road rage? I mean, because you're not getting hot or bothered under the collar. You have a button that says, just tell us like, what you're
back off.
And
give him beep,
and
beep,
you
beep,
push
beep,
the
beep.
Red button and it's like, back off.
Emoji.
Exactly. Emojis. emojis on the license plate. So that was cool. And then I see you guys. I mean, we touched on this a little bit last week, but Porsche shattered another record at the Nürburgring, which they obviously, you know, people thought was unbreakable. So last week we touched on the fact that Romain Dumas and Volkswagen breaking records at Pikes Peak. at the International Hill Climb. But just 5 days after Dumas made it to the top of the mountain, his colleagues with Porsche Motorsport, the team which won the Le Mans in 2016, have gone and shattered another record that some thought would never be broken. The Nürburgring, what's this? The Nordschleife.
Nordschleife.
There we go.
It's the German for the ring.
Yeah, exactly. So 12.9 miles, 20.8 kilometers. Timo Bernard drove his Porsche 919 Evo around it in just under 6 minutes. 5 minutes, well, in fact, way under. 5 minutes, 19 seconds, and 55 split seconds.
That's an amazing time.
That is flying, as far as I'm concerned.
See, now, this is combining the best of petrol and electric.
There we go. It's basically an
LMP1 car that they took around a track.
And delimited it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it took all the limitations of this thing. And
Fuel flow regulations were removed, so they allowed this petrol engine to develop full power.
And it
bumped
still
it from 500 horsepower to 720.
And it still couldn't develop more than about 20% efficiency.
Well, the hybrid system is only 10% stronger.
No, it's because it's got a petrol engine in there.
Now, is this the standard Nürburgring, or are there different rings?
The Nürburgring was much longer.
Yeah.
They have taken sections of it out over the decades. It used to be a Formula 1 track.
It used to be a Formula 1 track, and it's going to crap, to be honest.
Because it's a public institution. You can go there on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah.
You pay €5 at the toll gate,
yeah,
and you can go on there with your normal everyday car
and open it up.
You could go on there with a Renault Twingo if
you should
really
go and Google some of the flipping accidents because of that.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. The thing is, though, you sign a waiver.
Yes,
it
says,
and you pay for the damage.
If you crash,
okay, so you pay to fix it.
They charge you per half hour that the track is down. You pay for the Armco that gets replaced. Posts if the truck has to come out for every 15 minutes that the service vehicle has to come out to fetch you if you crash or break your car. It's insane. You could very easily rack up a €3,500
bill
just for just going for a little bit of a lunchtime jaunt with your Renault Twingo.
Plus the damage to your own car, which the insurance
won't cover because you're on a racetrack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or some other jackass that crashes into you.
Yeah.
So you're pretty screwed either way.
Mm-hmm. No,
so no, look, it's a public place. It's like a public park, and yeah, you in your.
It's sad because it was a really nice Formula One track.
Yeah,
but they're saying now that it's not. It's the only thing that can't race on there is Formula One now.
Yeah, because of the embankments and the turns and stuff.
Yeah. And the road surface. The surface of the track itself is pretty bad as well.
Man, I mean, if they had to fix that, would you be allowed to put an F1 car on there again or not really?
And the thing is, this record that has just been broken by an LMP1 car will never be broken unless it is in another hybrid car better than an LMP1 or a Formula 1 car.
Or an electric car of the future.
Well, we'll see about that.
We'll see if they can squeeze enough range out of those.
20Ks, I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Just to give you an idea, Sabine Schmidt,
yes,
who was the German top gear, did that racetrack.
In the van?
In a transit van.
Van, yes. I watched that one.
Just over 10 minutes.
That's flying.
Okay. The Civic Type R did it about 3 months ago. I think it was in 7.5 minutes or something like that.
Sure.
So to cut down on
time like that, that's amazing.
I don't think that record's going to get broken anytime soon.
Well, that's what they said 35 years ago with the Porsche, which set the previous lap record.
And they've done it all right.
And they've done it all right.
Well, anyway, talking about F1, I was crawling around in caves yesterday afternoon, and we got an Italian a visitor out here from the UK. She happens to be Italian, lives in the UK, and we took her to the Rhino Line Park, which was all fun and good. But I didn't get to watch the F1, so I'm going to hand over to George to unpack what went down, because when I saw the headlines this morning, I was like, yes, please. But I can only imagine it was an exciting race.
Holy hell.
For you to say wow. It was wow. It was, Vettel was second place on the grid. So at qualifying, Vettel was, the Ferraris were extremely fast.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sound like a sore loser on the qualifying, but on one of the last turns, that Vettel could have kept that pole position. You know, his car understeered a little bit, and Hamilton did a better lap than him and got into pole. So Vettel was second, and on the start, Vettel, that I don't know if you watched that. That start, it was gone. Blistering. He was that car looked like it stuck to the road like snot to a blanket.
Really?
It was unbelievable. it looked like he sailed past Hamilton.
So
on
was
the,
he?
On the
he
start.
Was in second, huh?
Yeah, he was second.
It was
on
like
the,
a perfect
on the
drag launch.
Yeah, perfect. And he sailed past Hamilton, and then I think that spooked Hamilton. To be honest,
yeah.
Otherwise, I don't think Hamilton would have made any mistakes. But it spooked Hamilton because Bottas even got past Hamilton, and then Raikkonen touched wheels with Hamilton, and Hamilton spun
out.
Back at the no, none of the two of them had any damage. Although the little ninny flipping complained that he's got damage to his car. What a fish paste! But then he cuts through the pack and ends the race in second anyway.
Jesus, I mean, so good driving in terms
no,
of
good
him
driving,
coming back.
Good driving. Raikkonen got a 10-second stop and go penalty, so cutting through the pack is not
so
that wild.
Take nothing away from Vettel.
Yes,
Raikkonen, driver of the day.
Yeah. He should have been, but they gave it to Hamilton, right?
The thing is though, when you get when you're in a position,
yeah,
you get a 10-second penalty because of the ninny.
Yeah.
And then you're basically at the back of the pack. And just like the guy that
came
second.
Yeah.
You just carve your way through the pack. And the overtakes,
you know, that's probably one of the biggest bugbears about Formula 1. It's, there's no more overtaking.
I think there's been more overtaking in the last three races than there has been in the last 10 years.
It's brilliant.
It's fun to watch Formula 1 again.
The last five laps of yesterday was Ferrari, Mercedes, and they were like
and
a
the
snake.
The four of them just going.
They were like a snake, all half a second apart, and you just didn't know who was going to pass who at what point. I mean, Hamilton was leading, and then Vettel overtook him, and then Bottas was third, and Raikkonen overtook him
because his tires were
gone. So it was nail biting those last five laps. Was.
But you know, all the crashed and. Didn't disappoint.
The Creston.
So where does that leave the standings? Okay, so Vettel, Hamilton, Raikkonen, Bottas, Ricciardo, and then Hülkenberg.
So Vettel's now pulled a bit of a
eight
lead.
8 points ahead.
Yeah.
Eight points
ahead.
Okay.
He's pulled a bit of a lead. He was 1 point ahead coming in. Now he's 8 points ahead because Hamilton. I'm actually glad Hamilton didn't crash out properly because it makes the rest.
No, it
of
made
the
for a good race. I'm
no,
sure
well, the rest of the rest of the year is going to be nail biting because
backwards
if
forwards,
he did, yeah, if he did crash out,
yeah,
I reckon Vettel that would have been the defining moment. Yeah. Vettel
so
would have won
championship over, to
yeah.
Vettel.
Yeah.
So it's still very, very close.
It's very close.
Anything.
Very, very close. What I also like is for the first time, Ferrari is quite a bit ahead from the constructors' point of view.
Oh, that's good. Right. Fantastic. So F1 season, obviously not disappointing and still very, very exciting. And just bringing it kind of home.
Sorry, I don't mean to belabor the point. But
cool. Okay.
Did you see Mr. Ninny and how he wouldn't talk to the commentators straight afterwards?
That is just
actually the worst was from the podium.
I'm gonna go cry in my trailer.
Huh? From the podium where he'd say, oh no, he wouldn't put it past Ferrari that the crash was due to team orders. Really?
Not a chance.
I heard some of the murmurings and stuff was somebody apologized to somebody.
Yeah, Raikkonen apologized. He said, I bumped him, took my penalty. I mean, I don't see it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he turned into a guy.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
It's a racing incident, in my racing humble incident. Opinion.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Okay, no problem. Well, carrying on with from F1, proper F1 to, I don't know, sometimes I think these guys are like Formula One drivers, and these are our concerns at the rise in drunk driving amongst taxi drivers. And so traffic authorities, this is from Cape Town, traffic authorities are getting seriously worried at the increasing number of public transport operators in the city who are driving drunk. At least 6 boozy minibus taxi drivers were nabbed at a roadblock in Wynberg on Saturday morning. This is obviously not this Saturday, the Saturday prior to that. So Mayoral Committee Member for Safety and Security, JP Smith, said, we're seeing an increase in the number of taxi drivers arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol, and it's extremely concerning. They were among 112 suspects arrested by traffic officers over the past 4 days. One of the suspects was more than 10 times over the legal limit for drivers with a public driving permit. Thousands of people rely on this as a mode of transport, and you're getting into a taxi 9 times times out of these 10, these things aren't even roadworthy. Yeah. And then you've got a driver who is under the influence of alcohol. Wow. And yeah. I think that the thing...
Throw the book at them.
But that's half the problem, Lawrence. I think the book is not being thrown at these guys. And I'm going to get onto another story now, which kind of bewilders me. But, I mean, I almost feel like the users of the taxis are fearful of the drivers. So the driver is the kingpin, yes, because he's got to operate the machine. But if they're driving fast, the commuter, him or herself, has no right to tell the driver, hey, you're speeding, slow down. Because they pretty much just get told to shut up or get out.
I don't know. I mean, 16 versus 1?
Well, but that's my point.
It's a little bit outnumbered there,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So, I mean, if they all
slow the hell down.
Yeah, you know. But, I mean, and here, illegal street races. So traffic officers arrested 86 motorists for drunk driving, 31 at two roadblocks in Weinberg and Claremont, and 36 at a roadblock in Khayelitsha. The Metro Police counterparts arrested 33 motorists for the same offences, including one driver who collided with a law enforcement vehicle in Perot on Saturday.
The law enforcement vehicle, what was the law enforcement vehicle do?
I don't know. It was probably driving in the opposite direction, but I don't know. It doesn't say. Yeah, but and then on the N1 in the vicinity of Gilles Besson Drive, three motorcyclists were clocked at 205 kilometers an hour. Obviously, three having a joyride.
Gilles Besson Drive.
Sorry,
and I know that stretch of road.
Yeah,
and I know the. It's very easy to
open up.
Yeah.
Open up and go.
And then obviously the guys in Belleville
doesn't make it right though.
On Sunday they were caught illegal street racing. Now I don't know why we don't just build these guys a piece of tarmac.
We have.
They've got it.
Where is it?
Yeah. So there's the Killarney drag strip and raceway.
Wednesday nights, Friday nights. Yeah.
It's probably not as exciting as.
A large part of the appeal comes from the fact that it's illegal.
Yeah.
I mean, they used to do that down Goodwood Main Road.
Yeah.
I don't know if they still do.
They used to do it near
Tinny Mayor Bypass.
I mean, we used to go, when I was a lad,
Colbremer Hospital.
Pure and Cool in Germiston. Used to slip through there and go and watch some oaks, race their golfs and stuff and their super bosses.
Their rabbits.
Yeah, their rabbits. But I mean, it's just crazy and something really needs to be done about it. I mean, I watch some, it's not a dig at the taxi drivers. It really isn't. I understand they spend their days on the road. They probably get cut full of all the bad drivers that
are on
the road.
Jolly at night.
But,
get home at 4 o'clock in the morning.
I mean,
still drunk.
On the way here, we come down a 3-lane road. The far right lane is a turning right lane. This oak went from there and turned left.
Yeah.
So it cuts
seen
in
it
front
this morning.
And I don't know what gives anybody the right to do that. Because you're putting everyone's lives at risk.
It's the same old, same old. We keep saying it on the show. Visible
policing. Exactly.
That's the only thing that's going to stop it. Get
it
the cops visible.
Anyway. Yeah.
But you know what? I must be honest. In the last 3 weeks, I've gone through two serious roadblocks.
So have I, and I've been pulled over twice, and I've got fines now building up in my cubbyhole. In fact, I got pulled over yesterday. So I'm driving on the highway, and four cops at the William Nickel off-ramp coming from the Hunts...
Big Ten, that's what we call it.
It's the Hunts Goodman, Hunts Stratum.
Hunts Stratum.
Hunts Stratum side.
Yeah.
And this cop jumps out. And now I know that... And I am not proud to say it, but my disc has expired.
Oh, goodness.
And this oak flagged me down, and I was like, oh, here we go. So I said, okay, that's fine. You know what? I'm in the wrong, and I'm not going to deny it. So he pulled me over, and he said to me, listen, your license, please. So I gave him the license. He says, your disc is expired. I said, I know. Here's the 500 rand fine that I got when I came out of the airport last week. So please just be kind to me. He said, okay, cool. I'm going to fine you for crossing over the white line. I said, you pulled me over. He says, yeah, but you still crossed the white line. I was like, come on, dude. So anyway, he didn't fine me for not having the license disc expired, but he fined me for crossing a solid white line, which is 125 rand versus 500. So I just said to him,
did you get your license disc fixed? That's the most important thing.
No, but I am going to do it this week.
Go to the traffic department. I do it now. Go to the post office, for heaven's sake.
Post office.
No, exactly. So yeah, anyway. So
but I must say that they've in my experience in the last couple of weeks, I've seen a lot more cops.
Me too. I don't know what it is, but and I'm all for it. I really am all for it.
What you just said there, Ty, is actually a very important point that I'd like to raise, and that is, if you get pulled over by the cops, don't get upset.
No,
if you've done something wrong, say, you know what, I screwed up.
and accept responsibilities. Don't get stroppy with the guy. But he's just doing his job.
Because he's just going to fine you for more.
More police, more police, more roadblocks. Let them, visible policing, you know, get the oaks with the expired and unload the cars off the road. That's how they do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you just happen to be in that dragnet, accept it and roll with it.
Well, that's the thing.
If you
I knew I was going to be fines,
and you know your car's roadworthy, and you know that your driver's license is cool.
Absolutely.
What are you worried about?
All you have to do is produce it to the guy, and you don't have to be a chop when you do it. It's exactly. Like hello, and you know what? The thing is, the guy is an officer of the law, so just treat him with a bit of respect. You know, you know, just hello, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir. Three bags full, sir. End of story.
I have to say though, I was pulled over in Pretoria in Sunnyside last week while driving a 3,000 kilometer old Hilux Dakar. The guy proceeded to give this brand new Bucky a full roadworthy by the side of the road. Now, I know there's no, I can't be liable for any fine on this guy.
Yeah,
and I know that my own driver's license is clean. So I did actually give him a whole lot of shit.
Did you?
Yes. In other words, pointing out the cars crabbing past, they'd see them and they'd let them through.
Okay, yeah.
But they'd pull over this brand new Bucky. And well, eventually I said, do you find anything wrong with this Bucky? No. Do you find anything wrong with my driver's license or anything on my name? And he said, no. I said, then either write me a ticket for being obstropolous or let me go.
Well,
and he said, there's no reason to pull an attitude on me, sir. I said, there is, because you're victimizing someone in the hope of finding something that can get you a bribe.
You're going to blow a blood vessel.
And
calm
he
down.
Just looked at
I
me.
I can see
that. It's just like, I know, right?
Thing in your head.
That's just a memory.
But to your point, so maybe he saw a brand new fancy car, so he thinks here comes
someone with money.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
Little did he know.
Hopefully those are the minority.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'd like to believe that they are.
Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, obviously we all know that the petrol price went up last week Wednesday again, and a whole bunch of taxi fine Uber drivers went on strike because these guys, and I didn't know this, but do you know that they obviously pay to fuel the vehicle, they pay the insurance and the monthly installments on the vehicle, but they've also got to pay the passenger liability insurance. As well as the public transport license. These guys are up in arms saying that they can't cope. They really can't. So, you know, those petrol prices increase and we're now hurting another industry.
Government just tells us just don't go anywhere.
Just don't go anywhere. Stay at home.
I put $250 in my car yesterday.
Ooh, you rich man.
It got me less than a quarter tank.
Yep.
No, it's crazy.
$250 used to be half a tank of juice.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, well, thank heavens for press calls.
A 60-litre tank would have cost you about 600 rand to fill.
Yeah, it's now just
short of 1,000 rand, yeah.
My little car with its 400-litre tank takes $600 now.
Anyway, before we get into, we are going to have a look at the Jeep Wrangler. Lawrence, you've been driving that, the Sahara. Yeah. But how's this? Busted. Learner license cheat caught in the act. Why would you get a criminal record rather just fail your learner's license? Do you catch my drift? So a guy writing his learner's license, a sharp-eyed examiner at the Milnerton Driving License Testing Center, spotted the applicant copying from a piece of paper with the answers on it during a test.
Who
I mean, it's a learner's license. How dumb are you? He's
who
the third applicant to the arrested at the Milnerton DLTC this year for the same offense, and he's going to be charged with fraud.
Yeah. Who gave him that piece of paper?
No, I think it's a good thing.
Who cares who gave him the piece of paper? He could have cribbed it. He could have.
Could have been the driving school. Guarantees you to get your learners. Yeah, just take this piece.
Yeah,
of
but
paper
irrespective, I'd rather just fail your learner's license. Now you're facing four charges.
You can't blame the driving school. You can't blame anything.
No,
you
got to blame
common sense.
Absolutely,
you can't cheat in an exam.
Yes.
Common sense.
That's why it's called an exam. It's not an open book exam, yeah.
So no.
And I mean, seriously, honestly.
Good for this inspector or examiner.
Well, I think so too. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how much it's changed, but surely it's not that hard to write your learners.
Nope. No, I'm busy going through the procedure right now.
Well, so for your bike license.
Yeah.
It's the same learner's license for a car license, though,
exactly,
isn't it?
The same. The lost page
so,
is different.
So street signs.
Road signs.
Road signs.
Yeah. Road behavior.
Road behavior.
Can't be that.
No, jeez, luck. So not anyway, to the oak that got cheating, I think you're a muppet.
We all think you're a muppet.
Right, guys, let's get on to this. Lawrence, the Jeep Wrangler Sahara. Tell us a little bit more about it. Is it the four-door?
Yes.
Okay.
Did it have an electric motor?
No.
Did it
choose
petrol?
So let me just
petrol?
Tell you, before you get into this review,
yes.
I drove one of these things for the weekend a couple of weeks ago.
They're phenomenal. It's a toy.
A phenomenal, it's a phenomenal toy.
Yeah.
Under 100 Ks an hour.
Yes, thank absolutely.
You. There we go. Amen.
That's my review.
I'm going to get to that point.
As right, long as so you don't try to park it.
The Jeep Wrangler is... Well, Jeep has been around for a really, really long time. Started out as Willys Overland back in the 40s.
Yeah.
They struggled to market the car to people as a daily driver. It was an agricultural tool. It was a tool of the army.
Mm.
It was a tool.
Yeah.
So, somewhere around about, I'd say, the 60s, 70s, it became a cool toy to have.
Like this and the Hummer.
So, I'm not going to get down that. Okay. Anyway, the Wrangler has always been an off-road toy.
Yes.
And nothing has changed.
No.
I drove this vehicle off-road. I've driven it through sand, mud, over rocks, up the side of a mountain. It is phenomenal off-road. Don't try and bring this thing into the suburbs.
It has
the turning circle of a cruise ship.
Yeah, no.
It has such a disconnect between the steering wheel and the front wheels. I drove it to the Free State.
Yeah.
On the freeway at 120, maxed out.
Yeah.
I couldn't hear what my wife was saying to me because the noise.
No, the engine noise, yeah.
No, not the engine
and
noise.
And the
wind noise. The wind noise, I know, yeah.
The 2.8 diesel engine.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's very, very comfortable at 120
Ks
that
an hour.
It.
Yeah.
So there's a massive phenomenon with these cars. I only found this out in the fact that I drove it. I don't know if you I don't want to steal your thunder there, but it's called steering induced oscillation. Now, because I'm a pilot, you get this thing in an aircraft called pilot induced oscillation, where you overcorrect all the time.
Okay.
So the plane banks one side, you correct, you overcorrect,
so you go the other way
and you overcorrect, and you carry on doing this. Eventually, you crash.
Yeah.
But apparently, the Wrangler is synonymous
for that
with steering induced oscillation.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happens, but
so
go watch his YouTube videos. It's funny.
Okay.
Well, they call it a death wobble as
death
well.
Death wobble. Yeah. Yep.
So the reason why there's such a bit of a disconnect, and I think Martin will back me up on this, is the gearing. So when you're off road, the faster you turn the steering wheel, the more it affects the front wheels.
Yeah.
The slower you turn the steering wheel, the slower the wheels turn.
Yeah.
And that just so that you can
turn the car.
It's got something to do with the steering box. Okay. So when you're off-road, you don't end up over-correcting.
Okay. That's the one part. And the other part is, as well, when you're off-road and you hit a rock with the one front
it
wheel,
doesn't spin the
that it
wheel
won't in. Rip the steering wheel out of your hands and throw the thing off the side of a mountain.
All right.
All right. Okay, now, to compensate for that, they made the steering ratio extremely, extremely lazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you have to turn it like 26 turns, lock to lock, just to lock. Try and get halfway into a parking slot because you can't make it all the way because it turns like a cruise liner.
Well, I do speak from experience because my father actually drives one, and I do enjoy taking it for a drive.
No,
he just loved it, and you can ask my kids.
Nice.
It's the best puddle hunting car.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it rained in Durban, you'd get the phone would ring,
it's
and
phenomenal.
It'd be my dad saying, "Do the boys want to go puddle hunting?"
It's phenomenal off road, and it's a fun car to drive.
Yeah.
Off-road.
Yes.
Everything about the car is designed to be off-road. You can take the doors off.
Yes.
That's a phenomenal car.
You can take the doors
absolutely
off in 2 minutes.
Yep.
You can take the roof off in a minute.
About 3 hours.
The Targa roofs.
Even the zip roof is not. It's a bit of a pain, and you need a Q20 just to make, because the zips do rust.
But like I said, it's a phenomenal vehicle.
Yeah.
The problem is I struggle to see why you would want to have a vehicle that is predominantly made for off-road activity.
Yeah,
have it as your daily driver.
Yes.
See this a lot with guys. They buy them, they use them off-road, and then when they're not using it off-road, they're trying to drive it around town.
It can be driven around town.
It can,
and
but it's just
slow speeds.
So you're not going to you're not racing anywhere.
Yeah.
Now what
yeah.
I mean is, so case in point, go to a mall.
Yeah.
Try and park it in a parking bay at a mall. Okay?
In one bay.
It won't turn.
Not going to happen.
So you can't get into the bay. And then you can't gauge where the corners of the vehicle are because of the flared arches and the
long overhang on the front bumper.
You know that there is a large rubber bumper on the front of the vehicle.
So who cares if you hit something? It's a Wrangler.
Well, the car next to you would care.
And this is the problem. at 789,000 rand, I cannot. You're basically paying almost R1 million for a toy.
Mm.
It's a very good toy.
Yes.
But if you're buying it as a half off road, half school run kind of maneuver, it's just you'd do better well to buy a Range Rover.
It has its place.
You look cool when you're driving it though.
Like really, if you really want one of these for off roading,
yes.
Don't buy a four door one to start off with. No, buy the short wheel base, two door.
Yeah.
All right. You know that's going to be even worse on the freeway because with the short wheel base it'll be even less stable.
Yeah.
But at least then you can really climb over things. The problem with this long wheelbase four-door one you had...
It's the breakover angle.
The breakover angle. So you have to be very careful to not bottom out the chassis when you drive over a crest. Okay. So the four-wheel drive system is incredible. It has fantastic axle articulation. It can do... It will go places you never thought a car or a vehicle would be able to go.
Yeah.
Except across a short bridge. So just buy a short wheelbase, two-door, use it as a toy, save R100,000. But, Lawrence, didn't you find that car to be full of contradictions as well? Look at the infotainment system.
Oh,
it has this thumping. How many speakers?
6 or 7 speakers. It's got speakers in
I think you're also missing the... Like, this is
It's a lifestyle thing.
As long as the sun is shining, and I don't care if there's a beach or a mountain nearby.
This
you
is
drop,
a tyrant vehicle.
You take the roof off that thing, you put your sound on, and you just...
It's got a waterproof sub in the boot.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is brilliant.
So it sounds amazing, but you can't connect your phone via Bluetooth.
No Bluetooth.
There's no Bluetooth connectivity at all.
I did.
Nope.
I did.
Not in a Wrangler, not with a standard sound system.
Yeah,
does not
exist. Sound system.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So, but you can. They do have a capability.
So you have to add it as an option. All right. Yeah. You can't play music from your phone directly, or even from a USB stick.
You have to download it onto the hard drive.
Yeah.
That's in the sound system before you can play back.
It's a touchscreen control, but the buttons are so small you can't poke them. You can't, like, touch
the
right
hold
things.
On, hold on a second, hold on a second. The car that I drove had the Uconnect system. Now, the Uconnect system was also in my...
This was also a Uconnect.
And you can connect your Bluetooth phone.
This one was
a
Uconnect.
There are different levels.
So I definitely, I mean, I would be very surprised if the 2018 model doesn't come with
guarantee
Uconnect,
it doesn't.
Because then that's a step backwards.
They call it Uconnect, but it's not the full Uconnect. So you can't connect via Bluetooth and you can't play from USB.
Is that called sometimes you connect?
Yeah.
Sometimes you can connect. Yeah.
So look, in total, it's a brilliant vehicle. It's good at what it does, but I can't stomach the price tag for just what it's good at. It's supposed to be a good all-rounder, and it comes up short in...
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not... It's I mean, let's be honest. It's not an all-rounder. It's an off-road vehicle.
Exactly, and that's the problem. With so many South Africans, you want a Hilux. You want a Range Rover.
Yeah.
You want something that is good doing the school run and going to the shops
and that you can use
over
the weekend to go mud hunting.
I think it's meant for the guy who has a Porsche and wants an off-road vehicle and can afford three cars and
he looks the part when he arrives.
It's
at
not
the
a sports utility vehicle.
His 100,000 rand bike.
Yeah, well,
on the back.
You won't be able to fit it in the boot
because the boot
is taken up by the folding soft top. So it'll have to go on a bike rack.
No, obviously it's got to go on a bike rack. Obviously
all that tyrant cares is does it fit a surfboard?
Absolutely.
No, it won't.
I bet you now.
Of course it does.
It will on top of the roof. On top of the roof,
On top of the roof, or if you're in the two-door, you just zip the glass, the plastic window out the back and you let it stick out the back.
That is cool.
It's and dusted. It's a little bit cuck if it's cold.
I thoroughly enjoyed the off-roading time with the vehicle, but I despised every minute that I drove it
on the road. And I suppose, you know, as a motoring journalist, that's kind of your job. You've got to think about it like that. But I mean, you know,
look, and that's why I said it's absolutely phenomenal. It's a brilliant vehicle for what it is.
Yeah.
But don't expect very, very good street manners.
Yeah.
And I said I finished off my article with, it's great, but you'd be much better off if you bought a Range Rover.
Yeah.
And which is exactly what George did.
Not a Rangey.
A Land Rover.
A Land Rover. Anyway.
Land Rover, Range Rover, same thing.
All right. Thank you very much for
that,
Lawrence. What's that?
Sorry. I love that Wrangler's engine, though. That 2.8
CRD.
That's a magnificent beast.
Proper engine.
Yeah, it's a proper engine.
Yeah.
So the ideal spec for a Wrangler would be a 2.8 CRD auto. Because you don't want that thing with a manual arm.
No.
You definitely. I've driven one. It's terrible. Short wheelbase, Rubicon spec with the diff locks and decoupling anti-roll bars as well. Yeah. And then you will go where the people with the modified Land Rovers will not be able to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Anyway, some good news. Tesla nearly triples the Model 3 production from its previous quarter. So I don't know if you recall, but you know, when Tesla came out and said they'd be producing 5,000 Model 3s by June 2018.
And that's despite
despite all the nonsense that they've been through. And they have actually, they've produced 5,031. So Tesla stock is up. And Elon Musk obviously sticking to his guns. And obviously this
Go, you biscuit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they've got all the naysayers.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't produced a lot of profits, but naturally, like you said, the more units they're bringing off the line, they will now start to generate the profits that he wants to now put into other projects.
But
which
he's
is fantastic.
Trying. What he's trying to do is he's trying to accelerate. Sorry, Martin. The advent of electric vehicles.
Absolutely.
Profit is not the only motivator.
No, because the more electric cars we see on the road, the more it's going to become the norm or the next big thing to own one and drive one. So, so hats off to Tesla for that. And then just in closing, Kroger will use autonomous vehicles to deliver groceries this fall. So long story short, guys, this is an electric vehicle that does not travel on roads. It is a pavement traveling electric vehicle. It will only do between 10 and 15 kilometers an hour. So safe enough that as a pedestrian, you'll be able to get out of its way. It doesn't cost half of what it costs to build.
Do you know what 15 kilometers an hour looks like?
No, no, it looks pretty
quick. It's a sprint.
It is. It's running fast. It is really running fast. But and this food chain in the States have deployed a whole bunch of these to deliver people's groceries to their houses. So literally put your order in online, the groceries are then, you know, packed and put into this electric vehicle, and they are delivered right to your door, which I think is phenomenal.
So it's basically a wheeled drone.
So if you own a Wrangler, then you do your shopping for this, because then you don't have to go and park in a parking lot. So
Wranglers in parking lots only to pull onto pavements.
Here we go. Got to help. Yeah. So the Nuro is announcing its first big commercial partnership with Kroger. So the vehicle is called a Nuro, and it's the nation's leading. Well, Kroger is the nation's leading grocery chain, and these guys are deploying electric vehicles to deliver shopping to people's houses, which is really cool. Would you? I mean,
I would.
The problem with South Africa, you know, and
our payments are as bad as our roads.
No. Besides that, it has to start with a retailer.
Well, but and you know what? I'm so glad you said Africa. That. Is are our retailers thinking about things like this?
Yeah,
in this
pick and pay.
Age.
Pick and pay does a you order it online.
Yes, and they'll do the shopping for you, and then they'll deliver it in the tuk-tuk.
And if they don't have Clover Milk, they're going to give you Everfresh, whether you like it or not.
So it's the next best thing, isn't it?
Exactly, which is ludicrous. So, I think the retailers need to first get their online shopping platforms sorted out
before
this can even happen.
Absolutely. Well, guys, thanks very much. I can't believe that's an hour up. Another good show and another week. And all the best. Travel safe and keep it loose.
As we say in flying, keep the numbers facing down.
Absolutely.
This is CliffCentral.com.